Hey, listener, this is producer Juliette Luini. Looking to ignite your creativity, maybe even through the magic of travel? I have a new series I know you'll love. It's called Offsite Adventures, and it's brought to you by the same team behind Spark and Fire, presented in alliance with Capital One Business. Join award-winning travel host Janet Shea as she ventures into iconic business destinations, uncovering the hidden gems that embody the essence of each city. Along the way, we'll introduce you to the remarkable individuals who breathe life into their communities. Whether you're on a business trip, chasing wanderlust, or simply seeking renewal, Offsite Adventures is your ticket to an unforgettable journey. Just search Offsite Adventures in your favorite podcast player and hit that follow button.
Chapter 1, Create from Joy.
I was talking to someone, they were just like, sometimes you just have like Daria energy. And I was like, yeah, I kind of do. I'm like a black Daria. The first blog post from my blog called Blaria, which stood for Black Daria, when I stopped watching Grey's Anatomy, Katherine Heigl's character Izzy had ghost sex with Denny. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to bow out. I'm going to remove myself from this narrative. But you guys continue to collect the checks because good for you. And so it was just like fun stuff like that. Writing for the sake of writing, following my gut on what I really enjoyed doing. There's this myth that you can only create from pain or duress or stress. I always just try to create from a joyful place. So much yummy, good, exciting stuff comes when you're excited and when you're happy. It doesn't mean that you are happy every day. No one's happy every day. But this is a thing that you do enjoy. Why not let the people who read what you write feel that joy?
That's stand-up comedian, writer, producer, and actor Phoebe Robinson. And she's about to tell us the story of writing the essay collection, You Can't Touch My Hair and Other Things I Still Have to Explain. This is Phoebe's personal story about writing her debut essay collection. But her story reveals something you can apply to your own creative practice. To hone your unique creative voice, tap into what brings you joy, and create from that place. As Phoebe takes us on the journey of creating You Can't Touch My Hair, you'll hear how she learns to own all parts of herself, the high and lowbrow. You'll also hear how she draws on the things that bring her the most joy in life, whether it's her Peloton bike or her obsession with the band U2. And you'll hear how writing from a place of joy allows Phoebe to explore complex issues in engaging and unexpected ways. Here's what you need to know about Phoebe and You Can't Touch My Hair. You may know Phoebe as the co-creator and co-star of the hit podcast turned HBO series Two Dope Queens and other critically acclaimed podcasts, including So Many White Guys and Black Frasier. She's published 3 books of essays, You Can't Touch My Hair, Everything's Trash But It's Okay, and Please Don't Sit on My Bed in Your Outside Clothes. As for You Can't Touch My Hair, it was published in 2016 by Plume, an imprint of Penguin Random House. It features 11 essays examining race, culture, and identity through the lens of Phoebe's own personal experience as a Black woman in America. It was a New York Times bestseller and featured on O Magazine's 2016 reading list. Since its release, Phoebe started the production company Tiny Reparations, which is dedicated to publishing television and books that amplify women, people of color, and the LGBTQ community. I'm your guest host, Chris McLeod, and on this episode, you'll hear original music composed for prepared piano. For visuals while you're listening, go to sparkandfire.com.
Every creative work you've ever loved has a hero's journey behind it. whether it's a book or a building, a film or a photograph. On this show, creators from different fields share their stories to fuel your creativity. From Wait What and the BBC, this is Spark and Fire.
Chapter 2. The Universe Sends Me a Sign.
This is like back when I was still on Facebook. I feel so old. But it was on Facebook, and I remember I would like post the link or whatever the blog post, and like people comment and blah blah blah. And I was like, oh, this is like so fun, and it's like really nice that people are like reading and be like, this is really funny. I was keeping it on a schedule, like, I got to file Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this time for my readers, which was like a couple hundred at the time and like wasn't anything remarkable. I told my manager at the time, I really think I have a book in me. For me, it felt like the next natural progression. And she was just like not particularly supportive. She was like, well, you're not really famous, so like, I don't think you should be spending your time on that. Wednesday, October 1st, 2014. Dear Phoebe, I hope this finds you well. I'm a literary agent at Sterling Lord Literaristic, a premier literary agency in Manhattan, would love to speak with you about a possible book. Of course, you may already have a literary agent, in which case I stand aside. One of the things about like being in entertainment is like you just always take the meeting because you just never know what's going to come of it. Go for the free bottle of water, that free bottle of Evian. It might be a waste of time, but it's good to meet someone. And right back, I was like so excited. It was so cute. I went to LA. We went to the Japanese restaurant. I was like not eating the sushi because I was like, I just don't trust it. I don't want to like get sick, blah, blah, blah. Because I'm from the Midwest. Everything is well done. Like even like, ugh, we just got to make this lettuce well done for this salad. Like we just don't fucking trust anything. Can I get this iceberg well done? It's like, bitch, what? I'm 38 now, so I'm like, give me every bit of fish fucking raw. I don't, just take it out the fucking East River. You don't even rinse it off. I'll just throw it down my gullet. I'm so much more sophisticated now when it comes to sushi. We just like sort of got to know each other. He's just like so funny and witty, and we just really bonded over our love of books. I was like, yeah, I think it'd just be a fun essay collection. I'd talk about like my childhood and my journey with going from hating my hair to sort of like being at peace with my hair. It would be really funny, but also be like vulnerable. And he was like, this sounds great. Just felt like we're very like-minded. You want the landscape of publishing to look different. He represents a lot of authors of color, a lot of women, a lot of queer authors, and which is, you know, very important to me. I was walking back to the subway and I was just like, I just had such a good feeling about him. I'm a person who believes in signs. It just sort of felt like the universe was clearing the deck a little bit, so that he then could come in and have someone who believes in me by my side, as opposed to someone who clearly did not. I was like, okay, things are falling into place, so it might work out in my favor.
Chapter 3, we start pitching to publishers.
literally everyone was like, no, 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 this book isn't relatable. Nobody wants to read books written by funny Black women. Books written by Black female authors don't sell. So it was like all this rejection, which was crazy because again, it was 2015. Normally you just go, oh, it's just not the right fit. Both people are right, just not together. It just felt like, sorry, but I think you guys are wrong. I think you guys aren't getting it. And because you're not getting it, you're saying it's not good rather than understanding it's a defect in your comprehension of what I'm trying to do. Even if someone else can't see it, I know that I have it, capital I, capital T. No, this book is gonna be good and it's gonna sell. I met with Kate, editor at Plume, which was the only imprint who was interested in the book. The advance that was offered was like peanuts, because, you know, I'm a debut author, and it's like, I'm unproven. Totally get it. We hit it off over the phone, and then Kate and I, we had like our first like in-person meal. I pitched something like 35 essays. She was like, well, how long do you expect these essays to be? I was like, I don't know, 5 to 8 pages. She was like, boo, we're writing a book. So we got to pare it down to the best of the best, and you really have to sit and unpack these things. She was like, this is great, we got to cut this. All this like reconfiguring of things. I was like, that sounds great, cool. Whatever we got to do to get it right, I'm here to do the work. I'm ready to show up. And then I just hit the ground running, writing it.
Chapter 4, A Little Help from Bono. How do you develop your unique creative voice? Own all parts of you, high and low.
When I first started writing this book, I was like, you know, I'm not like Trevor Noah. Him being biracial was like a fucking issue. I was like, I don't have anything that intense in my life. All the great writers, you know, they just all have their own zhuzh, their own little vibe. Not to name drop, but my friend Bono, we were hanging out one time and he was like, I know you like to act as though you're just lightweight, you're like not that deep, you're not that smart, you're just a funny person. But he was like, you're a very smart person. There's more there than like you're letting on. Just sort of being like, own all parts of you. The only way that I'm ever going to have a chance is if I just sound the most like me. I was like, I can use these situations of racial microaggressions to sort of be able to talk about larger issues like respectability politics and expectations that are placed on women, especially Black women, of how they're supposed to behave. High, low is how I would describe my writing. There's a lot of pop culture references, but there's also some smarty, smarty pants stuff that's going on. My friend Hasan Minhaj likes to say that I'm righteous and ratchet. That's how he just describes me. I kind of write to make myself laugh. I just like being ridiculous and saying those things that I know my brother's gonna be like, oh my God. He's gonna go, it's funny, but Jesus, do you have to say it like that? And it's like, I do. I'm unhinged when I write. That's why people like it, I think.
When Phoebe talks about writing, you can feel the joy overflowing from inside her. But it's more than making herself laugh. Phoebe uses her joy as a way into talking about the issues that are important to her. Chapter 5, When I'm Stuck.
There are those days where you're sort of like, I gotta just acknowledge that today is hard. You're not enjoying it. The computer's looking at you like, why are you doing this to yourself? It's not that deep. It doesn't mean that I can't do it. But it just means that on today, it fucking sucks. I'm a part of Peloton Nation, this Peloton Nation. So I have the bike and I have the treadmill. I did this boot camp today. In the last 4 minutes, I was so gassed. I was like, holy shit. I know I'm strong, but it just that next like 7% was just like, oh my God, this is like so much. I got to take breaks. I got to stop. Okay, this is really fucking hard. With writing, like there are those days where you're sort of like, I'm just going to power through it. I'll just sit at my desk for 10 hours a day and I'll just make it work. That is counterproductive. Give yourself permission to be like, it's not happening today. I'm just going to step away and say that today is not the day. And I will try again tomorrow. The discipline of always showing up will make up for those days where you're like, oh, I can't. Give yourself some grace. You can't beat yourself up. You can't.
Chapter 6, Writing the Essay, My 9 Not-So-Guilty Pleasures.
That's the essay where I rank the members of YouTube in order of who I would like smash. And my parents had to read that. But I wrote that essay. It was pure fun because I'm a person who does not believe in guilty pleasures. I hate when people are like, oh, like rom-coms are my guilty pleasure. It's like, no, you want to see a story in which people fall in love and everything works out. Everybody wants that because that's not how life is. So it's not guilty. It's a great pleasure to have. I have a close friend of mine. He just got a Peloton. I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. He like ate pizza, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, and now I gotta like make that up by exercising. And I was like, there is no making up. There's no making up. You wanted pizza, so you had the pizza. It can't be like I'm being air quotes bad eating this food and then exercise is gonna make me air quotes good again. It's like, you've always been good. Just eat what you want to eat within reason, and then work out within reason. You know how everyone was like, oh, The Rock, they'll like post his like cheat meal days, and it'll be like 30 pancakes, and then he'll like go to the gym. I'm like, guys, that's fucking insane. If a woman was doing that, it would be labeled disordered eating. Just have 4 pancakes. You don't need 30. And then you're gonna go work out at like 10 o'clock at night for 2 hours. Like this is, life is too short. We always assign so much negativity to the things that we enjoy, which I find so startling and backwards. At the end, I really wanted to be like, okay, I share my not so guilty pleasures. Now, like, think about what yours are. If it's not harming anyone, just do the things that you enjoy. Remove the value judgments. Don't feel guilt. Don't feel shame. It's okay to feel good.
Chapter 7, Writing the Essay, Uppity.
People talked about respectability politics for years. And so it's like, if you're going to address it, like, what is a way that you could do it that is going to engage people? The first story, so I was shooting this web series. Where are we shooting? In fucking Jersey? We're all just like trying to get speaking parts and like free bagels to do a web series. We're like going over the line and just, you know, a white person feeling like they can use a racially charged word to describe you in front of everyone. He called me uppity. This is a microaggression. It's not the worst thing that you could be called. He probably does not even really know that that is not the word to be using. If you have a reaction to this, you're going to be the crazy one. So you just better pretend like, okay, he said that and it's fine because I'm a professional, because then if not, then I'm like the angry black person here. Another black comic was sitting like to the right of me. We just did that like black person communication, like, did this shit really just happen? Yes, this shit really just happened. Ain't that a bitch? Yes, a bitch. And so we just had that like conversation with our eyeballs. I remember telling like the PA what happened. I was like, this is just like fucked up. And I'm like, I don't know why he's treating me like this. Not cool. So she was like, I'll talk to him. So then he like wanted to call me and talk about it. And I didn't pick up because I was like on my way to somewhere. He left me this like voicemail that I was just like, oh my God, this is becoming like about his feelings. And I texted her. I was like, I don't need to call him back. We don't need to talk about this. I was like, I'm really uninterested in this narrative. Like, I just want to move on. Me not giving the reaction that is expected in those situations threw those folks for a loop. You can't control what people say to you, but you can control how you react to it. I had to sort of figure out what kind of person I was going to be in this business. Am I going to let people's perception of me define me, or am I going to say they don't know me at all? They can have whatever perception they want of me. Go forth, keep having it. But I know who I am, what my worth is, and how I view myself. It just really made me sort of have a little more self-confidence.
Chapter 8, The Cover. What if you don't see eye to eye with your collaborators? Pitch your vision from a place of joy.
So Plume is great. Love them so much. Love and light. I love, I love, I love, I love. Just saying, I love, I love, I love. But they were like, hey, quick question. Can we just take one of like your pictures off your Facebook to make it the cover? And I was like, would you ask Stephen King that, or would you spend the like $300 to fucking shoot this cover? I didn't say that. That's what I thought. But I was like, I don't think that makes sense. Let's not be cheap here. I was like, I just love album covers that are just of people's faces, like Phil Collins, Adele, you know, just like a tight shot of a face. I was like, I just love that. I was like, I already have a photographer, Mindy Tucker, who is renowned in the stand-up comedy scene as just one of the top photographers. And then this wig, that's like some cheapy wig that was like $20, maybe $30. So I was like, okay, we're just gonna do face, curly wig. We got, you can't touch my hair. And I'm gonna be giving like a no nonsense look. That's what we should do. And then we're like, okay. Because obviously that's like very easy to shoot. It just worked. I think it's so fun for the book. I think it catches your eye if you're in Barnes and Noble. I just love that cover so much. So much.
I love how Phoebe's tone changes when she starts talking about her favorite album covers. In a frustrating moment, she's choosing to turn to what brings her joy. Chapter 9, Out in the World.
Robert and Kate called me, trying to be like, well, you know, Phoebe, we got some information in. And I was like, no, you're not going to try to raise my blood pressure. What is going on? And they were like, you made the New York Times bestsellers list. Oh my God, I can't. Like, I was just freaking out. I was like, this is happening on my first book. It's so crazy. It's so exciting. Grinning from ear to ear. I was in LA on set and I saw like a number I didn't recognize. And I just was like, I'm just gonna just set this to silent because I owe student loans and some credit cards. So I don't want to have to like answer and put on like my, I'm talking about money in front of white people voice. So I just was like, I'm gonna ignore this call. And then I was in a pitch meeting. The phone call happened again. I listened to the voicemail. A voicemail from Oprah. And I was like, you sent her the voicemail? I got out of this meeting. I was like, let me call back. So I call back and this dude answers. And I'm like, who this? And he's like, who is this? I didn't have my money together. I was like being aggressive with men on the phone. Like I was out here acting wild. Oprah got on, just said such lovely things to me and so nice. And she got it in the way that I intended it. Got the celebration of Black girlhood, got the celebration of being a feminist. I'm a believer that like the book is mine until it's out in the world, and then it's everyone bringing their perspective to the book, and that is like what makes the final product. And like people got it. All those like publishers who said that no one would get it and like it's not relatable. The truth is, you don't really fucking know.
Chapter 10, What the Book Means to Me Now.
Whenever I get the question, like, what do you hope for people to take away from your book? I'm like, I don't know. I just want it to entertain me. I want to feel good and have fun because this stuff is too hard to do otherwise, I think. You could tell there was a lot of joy in the writing of the book. Nothing feels belabored. It doesn't feel like a burden. It feels like, oh, this is a person who sat down and really wanted to write this today. Just do the stuff that you really love, and that authenticity will just like spread out and people get it.
I want to thank Phoebe for sharing her story with us, and I want to thank you for listening. I hope you heard things you can bring into your own work. It might be how Phoebe started out writing blog posts that made her laugh and followed her love of writing from there. Or maybe it's how she reframed the idea of guilty pleasures and that it's okay to feel good. And that in fact, our work is better if we feel good. Or maybe it's how, when she was frustrated with her imprint, Phoebe chose to tap into what brought her joy, and in the process, created her dream cover. Whatever you took from this story, we'd love to hear it. Share it with us on social at Spark and Fire Pod, or email us at hello@sparkandfire.com. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It helps people find the show. If you want to share this episode with a friend or collaborator, send them to sparkandfire.com, where you can find the transcripts, photographs, and sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Spark and Fire is a Wait What original series in partnership with the BBC. Our executive producers are Chris McLeod, June Cohen, and the BBC. Our senior producer is Timothy Lu Lee. Our story editor is Juliet Luini.
Our supporting producer is Catherine Clark Gray.
Music for this episode composed by Eduardo Rivera. Our music director is Ryan Holiday. Hill Yeager composed our theme. Mixing and mastering by Brian Pugh. Additional audio engineering and editing by Keith J. Nelson. Special thanks to Lori Hoffman, Darren Triff, Anna Pizzino, Sarah Tarter, Colin Howarth, Emily McManus, Kelsey Sison, Tim Cronin, Adam Heiner, Alfonso Bravo, Kiri Hart, George Kemble, and Charlie Manessis.
It's messy. I'm seeing things everywhere. And I'm just like I saw this play 3 weeks ago. So why do I still have the playbill on my desk? And then if I'm stressed out, I have this little thing that's really cute that I found on Amazon. And it's a little llama that I can just squeeze. If I ever get stuck and I'm just like, it's okay that you're stuck, just squeeze, and you'll come up with an idea. And it's got a couple little like wear and tears in it, but I love it. It's so cute. I think I named him Eddie. So this is Eddie the llama. But I had Eddie the llama sitting next to, oh, what did I do with it? There's a picture of me and Bono. Where did I put the picture of me and Bono? But usually, I had to hide it yesterday, but usually I have the picture of Bono and I just together as, you know, good friends. Yeah, when you squeeze Eddie, like parts of his body just sort of like bulge out, and it's so cute and it's so fun. And I used to need it more, but I feel like, you know, through therapy and my life coach, I'm less stressed and I'm more just like, listen, bitch, if someone's causing you stress, then you just kick them the fuck out. Like, you don't need to squeeze Eddie. Just tell them no. Although I am mildly panicking about where this picture of, I'm trying to be so cool, but I'm like, where is this picture of Bono and I? It's okay.